In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Hey, we're back here on a Monday afternoon. Time to talk movies. Yes, indeed. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams is with us. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
It'd be better if Carrie would turn your mic on.
How about that? Is that better?
Oh, gosh. It's like you're right here with us. What's going on?
Oh, you know, gearing up for the holidays.
Yeah.
Things are happening. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. I mean, look, I like Christmas, but it's nothing compared to your New Year's Day bash.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be lit AF, as the kids say.
Well, you managed to get to three movies this weekend, and I am giddy with excitement to hear your thoughts on all three of them. But you know, I got to save Cats for last.
Yeah, that's I think that's the way to go. Apologies to Jay Roach and all the wonderfully talented people who were involved with Bombshell. We're not going to be talking about that for very long today. For those who don't know, Bombshell, it's a dramatization of the sexual harassment scandal that rocked Fox News back in 2016 involving CEO Roger Ailes, played with grotesque prosthetics by John Lithgow. And it features Charlize Theron as Megyn Kelly, Nicole Kidman as Gretchen Carlson, and Margot Robbie as sort of a fictionalized, amalgamated sort of generic Fox employee, a young, ambitious lady. And it's basically the story of Carlson's initial lawsuit against Roger Ailes and how that sort of mushroomed over the course of a few months and sort of swept in the entirety of the Fox newsroom. Look, it's real life stories like this are very problematic to tell, especially when you're dealing with a cast of characters where nobody's really all that sympathetic. Mm. It's tough to sometimes remove the what you know of the reality from what's being portrayed there on the screen. That being said, there are some phenomenal performances in this. Charlize Theron is going to deserve every bit of attention that she gets for this. It's uncanny. It's an uncanny transformation. And Margot Robbie is also excellent, as is Nicole Kidman. Lithgow is suitably, toad-like in what he does. And the supporting cast is great, too. Various friends of downtown appear. Mark Duplass, PJ Byrne, and assorted others. Malcolm McDowell is very good. It's a perfectly good movie with some fine performances that will be recognized at award season. And that's all we need to say about that, because we got some more important stuff to get to.
All right. Well, let's move on to the latest Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. And extremes from what I saw on the internet. No one seemed to have a lukewarm opinion. It was either love it or hate it.
You know, it's really funny. And it was strange for me because I found myself unable to write the usual sort of movie review that I write when I was dealing with this movie, because I'm someone who I'm of a certain age and I have a very specific connection to the Star Wars saga. The first movie I ever saw, or at least the first movie I remember having seen, is The Empire Strikes Back. Like it's been a part of my pop cultural consciousness since I had a consciousness. And so there's a lot of meaning there for me. Like, I watched the original trilogy endlessly on like VHS at home. I watched the remasters when they came back to theaters. I convinced myself that I liked the prequels when they first came out, the whole thing. And I climbed on board with these sort of new iterations and was very excited about them. This movie, it was never like it's trying to make this movie. It's the sort of task that you would give that would only be undertaken by either a madman or a fool, because there's no way you can make everybody happy.
Right.
Like you simply can't, especially when you're coming after The Last Jedi, which Rian Johnson wrote and directed and was a very different film than what has come before in the Star Wars universe. And so this movie was very much a reaction to that in both good and bad ways. And ultimately, we all bring so much baggage to these movies specifically, because we have so much of our lives invested in them that, you know, there's no way to be fully objective, I think, about this movie, especially since it's sort of, you know, its intent is to bring that particular story to a conclusion. And endings are hard, and especially when you're dealing with a story that's been, you know, it's been, they've been telling it for 40 years,
yeah.
You know? And so I'm not going to go too much into plot only because, well, the reality is, I desperately do not want to spoil anything for anyone because this is, you know, this is the big one. Suffice it to say, the characters from the previous two movies are back doing things. I can say that, the sinister Emperor Palpatine is back. I can say that because they tell us in the opening crawl that he is back. He also has appeared at least orally in the trailers. If you're looking for explanations as to how exactly that happened, well, I'm certainly not equipped to give them to you. But yeah, and so it's basically another big fight for the fate of the universe. You know how it goes. The performances are solid. Frankly, the dynamic between Adam Driver as Kylo Ren and Daisy Ridley as Rey is the best thing about these new movies. And frankly, I'm kind of sad that we didn't get a little bit more of that in this one. But the truth is that J.J. Abrams, who directed this one, was trying very, very hard to dot every I, cross every T, and tie up every last loose thread. Because again, you're trying to come to a conclusion. And so you get a 2.5-hour movie that feels very rushed, almost frantic. Mm. And so there's a lot of old plot, a lot of new plot, and it's all happening very, very quickly. And I could see how some people would struggle with that because I think Star Wars, as a rule, has allowed itself to be a little bit more languid in the past, and there's a very accelerated pacing to this one. I myself quite like the movie. I've heard a lot of people like coming at it from both sides. There are the Last Jedi defenders who are mad that Abrams departed so far from that previous movie. And then there are the haters who are mad that Abrams did not go far enough in removing the story from that movie. And so it's...
And is that part of the challenge of having different directors and different visions?
Yeah, and I mean, I think there wasn't a ton of communication early on with regards to the overall arc of the three movies. Like, I think each movie, you know, especially The Force Awakens, which was pretty much A New Hope over again, and then The Last Jedi, which was a very distinct thing, they both had very clear visions, different visions. Mm. And to go from one director to another director, back to that first director, we saw some retconning. We saw some attempts to undo things that had been done or to move forward other things that had sort of been abandoned previously. It's tough. My feelings about this are complicated because, again, I had a great time watching this movie because I care about these people. Like, the new characters, yes, but... you know, we get to revisit some of our old friends as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the circumstances are less than ideal, like the usage of archival footage to put Carrie Fisher in this movie was very welcome to me. They did the best they could. It's very clear about that. But I found myself wishing that I could see the movie that we would have gotten if she was still around.
Right.
Because it was very clear that the intent was for her to sort of be the sort of anchor point of this last film. And you don't really get that in her absence, which is really too bad. Again, considering the huge obstacles placed in front of this movie's success, I think it came together very, very nicely. It probably won't do quite as much at the box office as some of its predecessors, so it'll only make like $1.5 billion or something like that. But yeah, as far as endings go, I can say, and I can only speak for myself, because as I said, I feel like Star Wars fandom is nothing but subjectivity. But for myself, I'm satisfied with the ending that I received, and all right. Really, I can't ask for more than that.
There you go. And finally, in our last review with Alan of 2019, we come to Cats. For my money, the worst Broadway musical of all time. Now coming to a multiplex near you with CGI and just some weird stuff.
You know, sometimes you see a trailer for a movie that captures your attention for like all the wrong reasons. You find yourself questioning what possible sequence of events led us to a place where this was a thing that was happening. You're asking yourself these really fundamental questions, you know, single word questions like how and why. that's what the trailer for Cats, you know, evoked in me. And like I was a theater major in college. Like I roomed with musical theater nerds. I'm familiar with the music of Cats. I've never seen the show on stage. I will say that. But again, I knew the music and I was culturally aware of it because you couldn't help but
right.
be, you know, at the Winter Garden now and forever. you know, it's like, that's a commercial I saw on TV here in Maine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just
right.
so ubiquitous as far as the broader
And there was
culture.
Always somebody at every musical audition who would sing Memory.
yes.
Usually badly.
So those are the feelings I got when I first saw the trailer. Director Tom Hooper adapted this CGI human hybrid monstrosity with just an incredibly star-studded cast. And we just watched these abominations gamble and cavort across the screen and just for a few minutes. And it raised a lot more questions than it answered. And so I went into the movie. I'm like, okay, this is what are we getting here? Rich, like that it's not even the half of it. Like you watch the trailer and you're like, oh, I think I understand. You don't understand. It's like this, like I felt crazy. Like I felt like a crazy person sitting in this movie. Like for the first 20 minutes, I'm just sort of looking around and I'm like, is everybody seeing this? It's like, it's the sort of nightmarish cinematic experience. Like imagine if like you took like a coked up like studio executive note session and combined it with like a dark ritual intended to like summon the elder gods. Like you put those two things together and that's the sort of unholy marriage that births something like Cats, because Jesus, Rich. Like I'm not going to go into the plot because I'll be real. I don't understand. I don't understand anything that happened in this movie. A cat gets abandoned in what appears to be some sort of like, you know, post-apocalyptic, like people have become cats or cats have become people. It's difficult to discern. This cat is abandoned. Her name is Victoria, apparently. She's actually a ballerina named Francesca Hayward. That's the woman who plays the part. And it's clearly a dance part. I mean, they're very... some very balletic moments that are lovely, I guess, except, you know, it's like a weird CGI cat with, you know, like I just had so many questions. But yeah. So, and then she encounters these other cats that call themselves Jellicle cats. I don't know what Jellicle means. I could have looked it up and then I'm like, you know what? It's probably better that I don't know. they're like, oh yeah, we're going to the Jellicle ball where this one old cat decides which of us gets to ascend to the heavens and be reborn. And I'm like, oh my god, Cats is about a death cult. It's an apocalyptic death cult led by a charismatic leader. There's no reincarnation. They're just sacrificing these cats to the sun god or whatever, sending them up into the sky never to be seen again. And so we meet all of these different cats doing cat stuff, played by famous people that you vaguely recognize. Like Rebel Wilson is in this. James Corden is in this. Jennifer Hudson. Taylor Swift shows up. Idris Elba. Like all these different people. And of course, the old Deuteronomy played by Judi Dench. Ian McKellen shows up at one point, and you're just like, what the hell is happening? Again, I can't stress enough, I watched this movie and felt like a crazy person. I sat there not knowing what was happening, not being able to follow whatever storyline there was. And it was all interspersed with a bunch of cats like jumping around on weirdly inconsistently scaled stuff. Like we were ostensibly supposed to be like operating in a, and you know, like they're cat sized in a human sized world. And so there are the like giant beds and like weird things, but other things were cat-sized, and some things were larger than human size.
Mine, did I read that like, some of them appeared to have cat parts, and some had like the human sexual parts?
Oh, there were oh, Rich, there were no genitals.
No.
No.
None at all.
Well, I mean, it's, yeah, it was all very smooth and like disconcertingly so. There's actually a whole side thing about the pop singer Jason Derulo has been giving numerous interviews talking about how upset he is that his apparently significant undercarriage has been edited out.
Wow.
Yes, CGI'd away because, you know, he didn't want to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah, spay and neuter people.
But man, like some of the cats wear hats, like, and some of them wear like jackets and clothes, and other ones don't. Like there's one who does a railroad tap dance, and he wears suspenders and little pants. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell this is. Rebel Wilson's character at one point unzips her front, like she's just like a cat, like with fur, like unzips her front, and underneath there's clothes and then more fur. And I'm like, seriously, what the hell is going on here? It was just so crazy and confusing. And again, it can't be stressed enough how horrifying these things look. Like you have these little bits where you see like, you know, the CGI, like the hybridization of the looks. And again, I know that there's been like a they're releasing updated visual effects or whatever, because, it was so sloppily put together that there are various parts of the movie where you could see like human bits that you're not supposed to be able to see. But yeah, like, you know, some of the cats are naked. Some of the cats are wearing collars. Some have like Idris Elba has like a fedora and like an overcoat. And he's an evil magic cat called McCavity. And I'm like, apparently this is the world I live in now, where where someone like Idris Elba is like, yeah, he's going to put in some colored contacts and prance around and do cat magic. And yeah. And
how did other people in the theater respond?
Stunned silence, I think, was the watchword of our particular theater going experience.
That's always good.
You know, it's just like, and you know, every once in a while, like there'd be something and you just stop and just kind of look around.
Like, did you guys see that too? Yeah.
Like, am I hallucinating this? Like, is this what you see right before you die? Like, is this what I'm going to be looking forward to when I'm laying on my deathbed? Like, am I just waiting to wander off to the higher up layer or whatever the hell they call it, like the weird cat heaven that, again, I can't stress enough, I'm pretty sure is just a sacrifice to their evil gods in an effort to make sure that the cream crop is plentiful or whatever. Look, there's some big production numbers that I guess would be impressive if, again, you weren't completely distracted and horrified by the Cthulhu Lovecraftian monstrosities that are prancing about hither and yon. Then you know what, the thing about it is, like, the music's not even that good. Like, there are a couple of okay songs, but it's just like how the hell was this thing so wildly popular? I guess I just don't understand. I mean, there's no accounting for taste, I guess, but I'm like, there's a part of me that's like viscerally offended that someone, anyone out there was like, you know what people would like? This.
But the thing ran for 100 years on Broadway.
Oh, I know.
And in London.
And I don't understand.
And I never understood that either.
Yeah. And again, as someone who, you know, whose connection with the stage version is pretty tangential, it's just like, I just sort of assumed it at least made sense. And I guess that's on me. You know, I suppose I should have paid closer attention to the fact that apparently, you know, American theatergoers spent the 1980s being idiots.
Or there might have been other factors at work there. It was the 80s.
I suppose that's true.
Dude, it's cats.
My understanding is, you know, cocaine makes a lot of things better. maybe you get coked up and the magical Mr. Mistopheles is a lot cooler. But all I know is I, like, Sheridan and I had to go out, like we were planning on just seeing the movie and going home. We actually had to go out somewhere else to sit down, have something to eat, have a drink, and just like and just talk through some stuff.
Yeah, because, well, sure, yeah.
Because again, I can't stress enough, you will never stop being horrified by what you're watching. Like you would think, oh, I'll get used to it, like I'll adjust, you know. And no, you will not. It will continue to be horrifying from minute one to the end of what is both the longest and kind of the shortest 2 hours you've ever experienced. Because here's the thing, like it feels like it's never ending, but at the same time, once you're done, you're like, I don't remember any of this. Like what happened? You know, and it just sort of, it's like this movie like forces your brain to like go full like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind out of self-defense. Like it just wipes big chunks of what happened clear, because you can't function carrying this around with you, Rich. I think that's the thing. And I'm really glad that I have the opportunity to sit here and share it with you guys, because otherwise it would just rattle around in there.
Right, it being you. Yeah. Now you've shared it. It's out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, look, man, I walked out of that theater and I half expected to get a phone call from a blocked number and pick it up and have like some like weird voice like sort of speak sing a semi-melodic song that basically involved me dying in 7 days. Like,
now when you got home, did you look at your cats differently?
You know what? It's like, I'm like, guys, thank you. Thank you for not being horrifying monstrosities from beyond the dimensional veil. Thank you for not singing at me.
Yeah, not having sort of human faces.
Yeah, not having human, like sort of human boob lumps, but not actual boobs. Because some of them had those, some of them didn't. It didn't seem to matter much whether, you know, female, male. Like, there was a lot. There's just so much, Rich. There's so much. And I haven't even addressed, and I know I sound like a lunatic. Like, I sound like I should be wearing, like, some sort of tinfoil hat right now. Mm-hmm. But, again, all I can say is thank you for allowing me to get this out before I go home and speak to my family on the holidays, because you know what? They don't need this.
Did you write it yet?
Oh yeah.
That help too?
Yes. It was a very cathartic sort of experience, that really helped as far as just sort of, you know, sometimes you just gotta suck the poison out. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let it go. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Alan.
You're very welcome.
Once again, we appreciate you going, so we don't ever have to.
Yeah, there are a few grenades that I've regretted falling on more than this one.
Ah, that's Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Alan, have a very Merry Christmas.
You as well.
And we'll see you New Year's Day.
Yes, sir.